to run. You never count your money. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. You got
the voice of the UK
and the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News at 5 o'clock. This is Tyler Dunn. Columns of smoke have been billowing over the suburbs of Beirut as Israeli airstrikes continue against buildings in the Lebanese capital. Israel says it has been targeting Hezbollah's headquarters as well as its arms stores and senior commanders. Lebanese officials say at least 6 people have been killed. Daniel Hagari is a spokesman for the Israeli military.
After almost a year of Hezbollah firing rockets, missiles and suicide drones at Israeli civilians, after almost a year of Israel warning the world and telling them that Hezbollah must be stopped, Israel is doing what every sovereign state in the world would do if they had a terror organization that seeks their destruction on their border.
Boris Johnson has said that during the pandemic, he asked the armed forces about raiding a warehouse in the Netherlands to retrieve COVID vaccines. In an extract from his memoir published in the Daily Mail, the former Prime Minister said the operation would have reclaimed AstraZeneca vaccines that he called legally ours. Kamala Harris has said she'll bar people who cross the border illegally from applying for asylum if she wins the US presidential election in November. Border security is seen as a strong issue for her rival, Donald Trump. Ms. Harris criticized the Republican nominee's record in office.
He did not solve the shortage of border agents. He did not create lawful pathways into our nation. He did nothing to address an outdated asylum system. And did not work with other governments in our hemisphere to deal with what clearly is also a regional challenge.
Scientists say that hundreds of emperor penguin chicks, which were feared dead after an iceberg blocked the entry to their colony, are in fact still alive. A satellite image shared with BBC News by the British Antarctic Survey shows signs of life at the Halley Bay colony. Here's our science reporter, Georgina Renard.
The huge walls of the iceberg that came to a stop in front of Halley Bay sealed off the penguin colony's newly hatched chicks from their mothers out hunting for food. The group had only recently reformed after a catastrophic breeding failure. In the dark Antarctic winter, scientists had no way of knowing its fate. But when the sun returned, they could finally see the birds on satellite pictures. The images show a tiny brown smudge on an expanse of white, showing there was life in the colony. But the iceberg weakened the sea ice, and the chicks need it to last until December. If it breaks up, they won't make it.
A comet will become visible in the next few days, and it may be one of the brightest in years. The best views of Comet Chu Chin Shan are expected to be in mid-October. And the weather, cloudy in Scotland with patches of light rain, some showers in Northern Ireland and the northwest of England and Wales, largely sunny and dry elsewhere. BBC News, it's now coming up to 3 minutes past five.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
Exciting times in F1.
This Sunday from 1.
Marina Bay Street Circuit.
Singapore.
Can Red Bull turn around their fortunes on a track that they haven't got good history at? Or are McLaren in a league of their own now?
Listen to live coverage of every lap
on 5 Sports Extra and BBC Sounds.
This is 5 Live Boxing.
On the outskirts of Sheffield for a press conference for a WBO lightweight title fight in Sheffield on Saturday. In that fight, Rhiannon Dixon, the champion against Terry Harper, not the champion, but a world champion previously at two different weights. Sure, it's not Wembley. Sure, it's not AJ. Sure, it's not Dubois. But it's a fight week all the same. And by the way, the fight is going to be live on 5 Live and BBC Sounds from 10 p.m. on Saturday. I'm Steve Bunce, still in the game. And this, my friend, is 5 Live Boxing.
We'll
So the press conference will start very soon, but I've managed to sit down with Eddie, and I've got to say this to you, Eddie Hearn, that is. You look tired. I'm tired. I'm not sure. It's a sort of toss-up between, well, listen to my voice, and I'm looking at you. I think if they turn the lights down and gave us pillows, we might kit for 6 or 7 hours. It feels that way.
Yeah, we go again. We
certainly do go again. I want to start with the Sheffield, Bill, but I will mention the thing in Madison Square Garden, because I particularly like the Michaela Mayo and Sandy Ryan fight. Rhiannon Dixon is an unlikely world champion, but she looked fantastic winning the belt. And Terry Harper, well, she just keeps on making history fight after fight.
Yeah, I think, you know, we talk about the development and the growth of women's boxing. If this was a male fight, you know, with one guy from Sheffield and one guy from just outside Manchester, two Brits, world lightweight title, it would be a mega fight. But it should be, and it's a big fight, you know, particularly for women's boxing. Rhiannon Dixon, who, like you said, you know, wasn't many years ago, she was working as a pharmacist and decided to take boxing on full time.
To lose some weight.
Because of the growth as well of women's boxing. Saw a career, saw an opportunity, linked up with Anthony Crolla and became world champion. And Terry Harper, who is more of one of the sort of old school, you know, now when you think about it, she's still young.
She's like a 50s fighter.
She is, but also at the same time, she was right behind the growth of boxing in Britain for females, you know, and she's a two division world champion, looking to become a three weight world champion. Really interesting story about moving from super feather all the way up to light middle, you know, really too heavy for her. But now back at lightweight, I think this is a weight that's really going to suit her. She fancies the job. And Rhiannon Dixon now, a lot of confidence, punching very hard as well. It's a really good fight.
Yeah, now, the thing with Harper is we know the great story that she had bought tickets to watch Katie Taylor. The next thing you know, you elevated her and gave her a spot on the undercard. So she was fighting. And then she wanted to, again, sort of buy tickets. And the next thing you know, she's fighting for getting closer and closer to a world title. And at the same time, she's peeling 50 kilos of potatoes every morning in the chip shop. Which, by the way, I don't care if it's not true.
Terry's not going to... Look, I might bend the truth of a story.
Oh, how dare you say
Terry
that.
Terry Harper definitely won't. She was working in a chippy. It's a great story.
That's the main event in on Saturday. But I particularly like a couple of things on the undercard. But I'm going to ask you one of the things that's not controversial, but it's, you know, a bit odd. Galal Yafai is on the bill, but he's got a massive fight November 30th with Sonny Edwards. Did he just want to have 6-8 rounds?
The problem
how does that work?
Is that Sonny hasn't boxed since earlier in the year, June, you know, and the problem is, you know, sorry, April, I apologise. Going into a fight of this magnitude 6 months later and really with little professional experience as well, Rob McCracken just felt we need to get out
rounds.
Because, and look, the opponent, I think, will give him 3 or 4 rounds max.
Yeah.
Just going through the motions, make him wait, just because otherwise, you know, you can't go into a fight as big as the Sonny Edwards fight against someone so experienced, as against someone who can really get into his flow. You can't go rusty or you can't go inactive.
Good point.
So I think Rob McCracken's made the right decision if there's no clash of heads on Saturday, if there's no damaged hands, because that would be a disaster
for everybody. It's a genius decision if it's all
good. But they would only take the fight with a run out.
Yeah.
So we had to provide it to them. There's plenty of time, by the way. I mean, look, standard.
Yeah, of course, yes.
Perfect. 9 weeks, I think, to go. So barring any disasters, it will probably work out very well for Galal Yafai. But everyone will be watching. They'll come face-to-face in the ring on Saturday night, all being well. And then there'll be a press conference on Tuesday, in Birmingham, to officially announce the fight and the undercard.
Which would be terrific. I've got to throw back to last weekend, and it's a simple question. Have you recovered? How are you feeling?
I mean, it's been
a long week.
Passed away. I've had so many messages, like, you know, Eddie, just thinking about you. Are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm all right. I mean, look, I love to win, and I'm gutted for AJ, but life goes on. And, you know, we've been here before. It's what happens in top-level sport. AJ's all right, which is obviously always our premium concern. And at the moment, just really motivated to get back. Knows he underperformed, but let's not take anything away from Dubois. He was spectacular. Heavyweight boxing, tried his heart out, never gave up, you know, to a point where actually started to find his feet again, thought he was getting back into the fight. Buzz Dubois jumped in to try and close the show. And I said, you got knocked out trying to win the fight. And you know, Buncey, how many fighters over the years have said, I would go out of my shield. I mean, I'm not losing on points.
He
tried to win the fight. And he thought this was my one and only opportunity to knock this kid out, and I'm jumping all over it. And, you know, you see the critics, oh, he should have just taken his time and broke him down. Listen, when you've been down four times and you're concussed and you see the other guy hurt, that's it. You can't think, oh, I'll wait till the 9th or 10th. Who knows if that day's coming? So, listen, he was brave, he was courageous, but he got beat, and he's very determined to come back and go again.
That's the last word on AJ and Dubois until AJ and Dubois are back in the ring, whether it's together or against anybody else. Eddie, listen, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it. Well, I've no idea what day it is. I've no idea where we are.
We don't
and I've
need
no
to
idea
know what
going.
Day is.
You just got to get up. It's Boxing Day.
Keep breathing, keep going.
Thanks, Ed.
Cheers, mate.
Now, fortunately, I'm with somebody who does know what day of the week it is and knows that in a couple of nights' time on Saturday, she'll be fighting for another world title. I've tried to calculate, Terry Harper, how much weight you've lost and gained. I'm not quite sure, but you look good for it right now. You look like lightweight might be your weight.
Yeah, 100%. I feel so comfortable at this weight. I've enjoyed the weight cut. It's literally just been clean eating, portion control, and I woke up this morning, a pound and a half to go.
That's
without drying out. That's water loading and full of water. So I'm in a good place, and I'm excited now.
But so we're super feather first title, then we go up to light middle, then we lose a world title fight, a world title. You're jumping across those ways. What's the light middle? I know it worked for you because you won title, you won and defended. But was that just too big?
Yeah, it taught me that there's weight classes in boxing for a reason, and
yeah,
you had to learn the hard way. But do you know what? We had the opportunities there, and we had them given to us, and. We just kind of did what we were told to do, really.
Because there was an opportunity and you could win a title. Yeah. Now, what about the... I've got to ask you about the Sandy Ryan fight. It was an odd fight. What actually happened in it? I mean, I know Steffi...
Oh, you're asking me? I can't remember.
No. Well, yeah. So what actually was said? Was it at the end of the third with Steffi in the corner talking to you? Andrew, as you call him. We all call him Steffi. You call him Andrew.
So I remember going out in the first and... Obviously, I chucked kitchen sink, everything I had at Sandy, and she was just there, and everything just seemed to bounce off her. And then I can remember getting caught, I think it was in the second round, and just one of these that side head that kind of just take all your senses. And,
yeah. So you're there, but not there?
Yeah. That's me every day, that. No, I'm joking. But yeah, like I just struggled to get into the fight, couldn't get settled into the fight. Sandy just too big and too strong, and then come end of the third round, back to my corner, Andrew says if I don't give him anything in this round, he's pulling it, because obviously my health is his number one priority. So I went out the fourth, tried to do something, and it just didn't happen. Obviously then back to the corner, disappointed, knowing what were about to happen, but again, my health and my safety is number one priority for my team and for myself.
So, but Sandy's a good fighter anyway. Let's get that absolutely right.
Oh, yeah, Sandy's elite. That's yeah, I think.
She's elite.
It took. I kind of got away with it up at the such a high weight against Hannah Rankin.
Your speed works, yeah.
But as soon as you're stepping in with the elite girls, that's when you can tell the difference.
So you're back down now, and Rhiannon Dixon, and by the way, you know, she won the title and she won it well, but she's not elite. You know, she's come from a different background, a white collar, only 10 or so pro fights. But that doesn't mean she isn't a good opponent. She's under rank collar. She's improved beyond belief.
Yeah, 100%. I'm a big fan of Rhiannon. I think she's like, she reminds me a bit of myself, obviously not a massive, although she's got no amateur background, and come from white collar, and just the way she's skyrocketed from, like, she's just improving every time. But I think it's, again, she's not been in the ring with anyone yet, and I am her first true test, so I'm excited to be her first test. And but I feel like over the years I've got all this experience, and
you've got big names on your record. Yeah, win or lose, they're big names, aren't they?
Up at the higher weight, and I feel like I'm finally, for the first time in a long time, I'm going into a fight not at a disadvantage already with the weight. So
you know what it's turning into? There was a time, Terry, when we talked to you, and all we talked about was the chip shop, and all we talked about was you buying tickets to see Katie Taylor. Now we're talking to you. You're a young veteran.
Yeah,
you've been there, you've seen it, you've done it, you're about to win, you know, you're about to win a world title at a third weight, you're making history, all those massive, half a dozen big names on your record. You're season pro now, no more chip shot questions.
I feel like I really am coming into my prime years. And I know I said that before, my sparring, I've just not had the opportunity to truly show it on the big stage. And I feel like Saturday night is where I do that.
And will we start lightweight then?
Yeah.
Unless an offer comes up somewhere else.
No, staying at lightweight. Looking back now, I kind of do wish after the Ulysses fight I just rebuilt here. But like I said, opportunities were there and to become two-weight world champion and all that. But yeah, we're finally back where we belong and just to build from here now.
Listen, enjoy yourself on Saturday.
Thank
night.
You.
It's always great talking to you.
Thank you.
So I've left Terry Harper. She's wandered off, no longer going back to the chip shop or buying tickets to see a fight. She's now front and centre. And I wander over to someone that we sat down with in a coffee shop a couple of months ago in Manchester. And I'm not going to lie, she gave me plenty of stick. She started off being really polite, and then she gently started giving me stick. So much so that Manny was loving it. Anyway, I'm with Rhiannon Dixon, the champion. First of all, could I just say, you look terrific. Because you're on weight, but your face doesn't look drawn. You know, you haven't got ridiculous sunken cheekbones. You're not sucking, desperate to get a lemon in your mouth for a bit of refreshment. You look really good.
Oh, yeah, no, I've got the best nutritionist, Carl Evans. So he makes sure that everything's perfect. So, to be honest, I probably should be walking around it this way because I look good for it.
You do look good for a girl.
This is probably just what normal girls look like.
No, they don't. Normal girls don't train like 4 hours a day for 2 months, you soppy sausage. But it's a nice idea that normal girls do that. Normal people don't do what you do.
Yeah, true, they don't.
That's true.
Yeah.
So how does it feel to be champion?
You know what, it's crazy, it just still hasn't registered yet. So like when people say it to me, like, oh, you're a world champion, and then I see the belt, I'm like, oh my God, that's mine.
I must be.
I know, I must be.
Have you watched that fight back? Because I'm not sure when I spoke to you last, you had.
Yeah, it was ugly, don't like it. Minus 10 out of 10.
Rubbish, it was a perfect...
Tomatoes.
It was a perfect proper knockdown, a real heavy knockdown. Not a slip, not a clip, a real good shot. She doesn't go over.
Yeah,
you dropped her clean.
Yeah.
Do you feel, this is an odd question, but I think you might know what I mean. Do you feel different now? Do you feel like, I know it's only like 10 or so fights and, you know, that your previous history, white collar, no amateurs, not that far back, but you beat a good champion. You beat a good fighter to be the champion. You're a big girl now. You know what I mean by that? Does it feel different, Rhiannon?
It is mad. Like, it has, like, just got, I think, because I wasn't happy with the performance, I've like got like an underdog mentality, and I feel like
nothing
I've got
wrong
a
with
point
that.
To prove.
Daniel Dubois last weekend.
Exactly.
The world champion, but the underdog,
exactly.
And he knew it in his head.
Yeah, and I feel like I've got a point to prove, and I feel like I need to show that on Saturday. Like, everyone's like, oh, you know, she's a world champion, but people don't go on about like the things that I've done good, and I want to show people what everything that I can do.
How'd you beat her?
I think this is genuinely going to be my career best performance. Mm. I think it's going to be my coming out party. Mm. And I think it's just going to be a demolition job.
Mm. You fancy a little bit, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. I think I've got a point to prove.
Yeah.
I feel like people overlook me a lot.
Yeah, they do. I mean, yeah. But you understand that.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, you've got
exactly.
to make people, you know, people accept you, acknowledge you, but then they say, but she's only had 10 fights.
Yeah.
She's come from a different background, you know. She's not quite
yeah,
one.
She
hasn't had, like, Terry went to, like, you know, Armenia when she was 14 or something for, like, the European schools or something.
Exactly. And I feel like even when I do, like, a little bit wrong, it's kind of like people pick up on that more because they go, oh, it's a white-collar background. It's a white... Do you know
good
what I mean?
Good motivation, though.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And look at Fabio Wardley. He's the British heavyweight champion and people still talk about him. Oh, he's still a white-collar boxer. Is he, heck? He beat a bronze... You know, he's a proper... British champion.
Exactly. So I feel like that's a point I've got to prove on Saturday, that I'm worthy of being a world champion.
And I'm going to speak to Ant Crawler, hopefully. Well, I haven't seen what's his hair doing at the moment.
Do you know what? His hair's actually really nice.
Because he went a bit. When the time he won the title, he was proper Richard Gere in it, 1990s.
Am I allowed to swear on this?
Yeah, but we beep it out.
Right. So I used to say that he had a bob, right? And I used to call it a fab, and he's lost the fab. And he looks nice now. Yeah. He says, there he is over there.
Yeah. So, and has he been, well, I'm going to say, I'll get your opinion first, then I'll ask him, how's he been in the gym? Has he been impressed? Because I think you, and I told you this before, and I'm not going to embarrass you, when I kept that during COVID, whenever I was up in Joe Gallagher's gym in Bolton, and you'd be there training, and I'd be seeing Natasha Jonas, or I'd be seeing Callum Johnson, then I'd see you over here,
and you were just getting better and better with each time. Like three months later, you were almost unrecognizable. Is he still seeing that improvement?
Oh yeah, definitely. I feel like
can you still sense it that way as well?
Every single fight, every week, to be honest, I feel like, because I haven't got this massive amateur background, they all come already made boxers and they know everything.
Good point, yeah.
I don't even know how to box. I'm still learning. So I feel like I'm just learning what everyone else learned 10 years ago.
Life's good, isn't it?
Life is really good.
Listen, Rhianna, it's a pleasure to talk to you. When I did that pod, people said, Bunce, is she really that nice and that funny? I went, no, she's better than that. She's funnier than that and she's nicer than that, because you are.
Aww.
You're top. No, I mean, you're top girl.
Thanks.
And I don't mind when you gave me a bit of stick. It's all right. It was just a little
bit.
You
deserve it.
Thank you very much. Rhianna Dixon, WBO lightweight champion of the world. Thanks very much. I want to go and find Crawler now.
Thanks.
And as if by magic, here he is. The man with the, well, I can't repeat what Rhiannon said. I'm with Ant Crawler. And all jokes aside, and I say this to Rhiannon, and sometimes she seems to be a bit embarrassed by it. Her improvement, it's endless progression.
No, it is. And I said it like there. I knew the moment I first got her, before like I started putting her on fighters like that, I knew it was a rough diamond, Stephen. I knew she just had to be polished, as you say. And I knew, once that happened and she got that little bit of experience, she'd be ready to for these big nights. And this is what I see Saturday as being, you know, it's her first time topping a bill.
It's a big
test. She's fighting a big name in the female division. Yeah. And like you say, we've got loads of respect for Terry and her team. But it's a fight that we've always believed would happen. At one point before, when Terry was going to wait, maybe not.
Yeah.
But now she's coming down, we thought that'll happen again, that. And it's a fight we've always fancied.
Yeah. And she's also... not to put too fine a point on it, she feels like she's got a point to prove.
She has.
Which makes her a dangerous fight. A bit like Dubois last weekend, if you don't mind me saying so.
She's got to be in a bonnet, and it was like, I don't even think it was meant that, but I think she took it personal and told her, no, I'll stop her. And she's like, she took it personal, but like with Rhiannon, she's this funny girl. Like we were talking about, like,
she's got good sense of humor.
She's funny, and like, but she's also got that devilment in her where, like, she can flip the switch just like that. This on Saturday, I think it's got the potential to be a fantastic fight, but I think it's also got the potential for Rhiannon to look very good in it.
Yeah, I think that there's a chance. Well, actually, I've been honest with you, no matter who wins, they'll have to perform well.
Of course they will. Like,
Terry can't coast this on her experience and win without breaking a sweat.
No way.
And Rhiannon can't beat her on points or stoppage without having a fight out of her skin. That's the way I see it, and as an outsider, I'm neutral.
No, of course, Stephen, I respect that. And listen, it's not speaking out of turn here. I genuinely, listen, Terry's been in with some of the top names in female boxing.
Absolutely.
I believe Saturday night, Rhiannon Dixon will be added to that list. I really do.
Yeah. And then, she's still young in boxing years. And there are big fights out there, lightweight or moving up, people moving down. Yeah. The next 3 or 4 years, if things work out, there's half a dozen big fights.
Of course there is.
For any of our women around 9, 10, up to 10 and a half
stone. Steve, absolutely. And that's why we think this is a great fight for him, because, Terry, I don't want it to sound disrespectful when I say all that you said, because it's not a profile fight, it's a world title fight, but it's the kind of fight that Terry's a big name in the female boxing. She wins this and she wins it in style, then Rhiannon becomes in the mix for those big fights. Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this, and I know you tell me the truth. I've only ever seen Rhiannon, I've seen her exhausted on the floor in the gym, absolutely with a puddle of water around, absolutely ruined after that stepmaster thing.
But she's a grafter.
Does she have days when it's hard? Because I've only ever seen her really smiling or on the floor exhausted.
I mean it, honestly, Steve. She's the hardest worker in the gym. She is. She's an amazing athlete. Like, I genuinely believe if she didn't go into boxing, she could have gone into the MMA and competed at a very, very high level. She can do a little bit of everything.
Oh, wow.
But listen, I think we all have tough days where we might go under, but she's not a complainer whatsoever. She just gets on with it, and she's got that inner steel and that sort of mentality where, no, I'm going to come through this. I'm going to, you know, she likes it rough. She likes it rough. And I think that's why I think she took it a little bit personal with the stoppage shout.
Yeah, you know what? It's going to be a better fight than I maybe expected when it was announced. But seeing them here today and talking to them here today, I'm with you.
They're both on it. It should be good.
And listen, I was only joking about your hair. Your hair's fantastic. And I'm not the man that would ever criticise her. She's not. No, of course not. But that's Rhiannon. And listen, thanks for your time.
See you Saturday night, mate. See you later, mate. See you later.
So, Ant Crawler there with still splendid hair, even if Rhiannon Dixon's convinced it's not as splendid as it once was. Now, in this magna, this massive magna centre here, it's a giant steelworks and sort of entertainment complex on the, well, it's outside of Sheffield. I suppose it's Rotherham, really. Now, I need somebody to talk me through what might happen in the fight and what it was like on the stage, because he got mildly testy. And that man is Matchroom and DAZN's roving reporter, which doesn't actually capture what it does, Jamie Ward. Jane, first of all, I could just sense a little bit on the stage there. I don't think that Rihanna was too impressed with the idea that Terry Harper sat 4 feet away, said she was going to stop her.
Well, she laughed.
Yeah.
She laughed. Well, I went up to the gym. I spend time with a lot of fighters in the build-up to these fights, and I went up to the gym to Doncaster, where Terry's been since she turned professional, with Steffi Ball, and over, of course, to the Fox ABC, the new Fox ABC. And look, I have to stir the pot a little bit. It's my job, right? I like both girls, but I have
There's no need.
I have to. No, there is. Come on, you know, Steve. You know, we need that, right? Boxing sometimes needs that, and sometimes you need a bit of a prod. Yeah. And
when it's Rihanna natural like that, it's organic. Yeah, well, I like it.
Because I only ever use quotes from the fighters. I'm not making stuff up.
She said, he said.
Exactly. And look, some people might not like that, but ultimately that's what sells fights and drives the intrigue and the interest. Rihanna laughed because Terry's prediction was that she believes she wins the fight by stoppage.
Yep.
And Rihanna laughed at that, which I think tells you all you need to know about the self-belief and the confidence that Rihanna Dixon has. Bearing in mind the limited experience she had as an amateur, and bearing in mind where she's at as a professional right now in what is her first defence, definitely her toughest fight.
By
so
some
far.
Stretch.
We're going to find out a lot about Rihanna Dixon in this fight, and we're going to find out a lot about Terry Harper.
Yep.
On the flip side, someone who's already been at the top and been in with the great names, Natasha Jonas, Cecilia Brakehurst, the First Lady, of course. Alicia Baumgartner, the list goes on for Terry. But I think we're going to find out on what Terry has left, especially down at 135. Mm. Interestingly, Terry's the younger out of the two. Which I think gets
which
missed.
People overlook.
Sometimes you'd probably think because of the lack of experience, Rihanna is
you'd have Rihanna 5, 6, 7 years older. It's
exactly.
Not the case,
but you have to say, you know, when you go from £130 up to £154, back down to 147, and that was a tough fight for her, wasn't it, with Sandy Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, she told me what happened, and I know she told you on the stage what had happened, and that was kind of professional, her attitude to that I gave it all I had in the fourth. It didn't work, so Steffi, or Andy as she calls him, pulled me out. Still hard to deal with for a fighter that.
Well, definitely.
It's in your mind.
And interestingly, I don't think that will leave. Definitely not to go straight into
absolutely,
a fight like this. But I think she sees that, I don't want to say an easier fight, but she sees that she's been boxing at a higher level.
She does. Let's not mince our words. Terry Harper thinks this is going to be a simple night's work.
Yeah, Rhiannon could be a next star of women's boxing. This is her chance to prove it. But what Terry Harper's done, interestingly, is she's brought in a guy called Paul DeRose, who was her old amateur coach, who I believe has actually taken the main role within this whole training camp. And from watching her on the pads, when you talk about what's going to happen in this fight, we know Rhiannon is aggressive. By all accounts, she could really punch. We know she sparred.
We saw that gorgeous, brilliant knockdown in winning a world title. It was a perfect shot. Not a lucky shot. She looked for it. She found it. She dropped her heavily.
But by all accounts, when you look at the questions out the ring that you could ask about heart, desire and chin, right, that we're not necessarily seen under the lights. Bowl accounts, she sparred Chantelle Cameron, who threw the kitchen sink at her.
Yes.
Talked about how tough she was, talked about how
Kelly
hard
Harrington as
Kelly
well.
Harrington,
and Kelly Harrington and Chantelle do not do easy spars. You know what I mean
absolutely.
By that. Totally different.
And
Chantelle's vicious.
Chantelle talked about how hard Rhiannon punches, which is an interesting factor.
I didn't realise that's
fight.
A good line.
But when you look at Terry Harper, just even from watching her on the pads with Paul, she looks a lot looser. She looks like she's got the fluid feet back that she had down at £130, which saw her win fights against the likes of Eva Wallstrom, who had been around a lot longer than her at that stage of her
pros.
Journey when she was only, 22, 23 years of age, and against go toe-to-toe with Tasha Jonas. But I think back down at 135 will definitely be more suited. She says she's felt the best she's ever had.
Yeah,
that's another question. Will the body be struggling to make that weight from moving down from 147 and 154 previously? But I think Terry's going to approach this with more of a boxing focus. I don't think she's going to stand there and go toe-to-toe with someone who's being talked about as a puncher.
Even though she's fought better women higher up, I agree with you. I don't think she'll come down. I'm not saying there's disrespect. She might feel she can win. She might be confident. But I don't think she'll be stupid. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think discipline. It'll be a disciplined performance.
It's a good fight, though, isn't it?
But it's a great fight.
In a kind of odd way,
it's a
good fight.
Very good fight.
Really good fight.
Two great matchups, and women's boxing is smiling, Steve.
Women's boxing is smiling. Heavyweight boxing is smiling. Jamie's always smiling. I'm smiling. Even Paddy, the promoter. Not the promoter, the producer, is smiling. We're live on 5 Live and BBC Sounds from 10 p.m. on Saturday. Now, I know last week there were over 98,000 people. There was that ridiculous heavyweight fight, 3 knockdowns, 1 knockout.
98,000 people, regret, redemption, whatever you want to do. That was the backstory. But this is also a proper fight. It's a world title fight. Rhiannon Dixon's got her own story. During COVID, she was working as a pharmacist. And, of course, Terry Harper's got her own story. Just before COVID, she was working peeling 100 kilos of potatoes every day for a chip shop. Stories like that, you see, that's what we deliver every single week. So that's from 10 p.m. on Saturday. Five Live and BBC Sounds. Rhiannon Dixon defending a WBO lightweight title against Terry Harper, who will be trying to win a world title at a third weight. I'm Steve Bunce, and this has most definitely been Five Live Boxing.
I'm Kim Cattrall, and I want to tell you about my new podcast, a new audio drama telling the history of the CIA from the inside out.
The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked.
He's got to convince Congress to give him an open checkbook now.
America has suffered its worst domestic attack of the 20th century at Pearl Harbor.
How do we make contact with the NKGB?
Central Intelligence, starring me, Kim Cattrall, Ed Harris, and Johnny Flynn.
There's $50,000 in it for you if you say yes.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
This is all smoke and mirrors. That's sales.
On BBC iPlayer.
What have you got to offer me?
Look, this is in all of our interests, right?
The new series of Industry.
I'm so glad you came.
Starring Kit Harington.
I'm an investment banker. Did you invite me here to watch you eat?
No, I invited you here to seduce you.
I've never met anyone with a bigger blind spot.
All's fair in love and war, right?
I needed my friend and you used me.
Industry.
Now, we go to work.
Starts Tuesday on BBC iPlayer.
Hello, thanks for listening to My Mates a Footballer with me, Joe Wilkinson, and the kit man's worst nightmare, Patrick Bamford. In this episode, Pat catches me by surprise by trying to find out if I still want a career in football after I so-called fumbled my attempt at becoming a free kick specialist at the age of 49. We were supposed to find out about all sorts of different jobs at the club, but I got slightly obsessed with the kit man. So. Leeds kit man Bees tells me what the best and worst parts of his job are, and I also find out how the players put him under pressure on match day and in training. Plus, I asked Patrick to do some more homework for the next episode so we can work out exactly what role best suits me at the club and how I can actually get that job. Okay, hope you enjoy it. Cheers.
Hi, sorry about that.
Are you relieved?
Pardon?
Are you relieved?
I am relieved. Oh, I feel 2 stone lighter.
So, you know how you kind of... I don't want to be too horrible here.
I'm in trouble.
No. You know how you fumbled your chance to earn a contract with that free kick?
Yes, I do. It's all I think about. Yes.
Yeah. How would you feel about... or would you ever consider... working in football but in a different capacity?
Oh yeah, I'd dream of it.
You would?
Yeah, just so I could say, what do you do? I'm involved with Leeds United.
Yeah, but like, as what would your choice be?
I'd literally do anything to be in I think I like the idea of being kit man maybe, or physio. I want to be in and around the match, something that involves where I can go to the matches. I don't want to be like waving you off.
Well, do you know, I'm glad you said kit man, because I got the kit man to kind of say the best and worst features.
Oh, really?
Of being the kit man, yeah, so that you can...
Oh, God.
If you turned around and said, do you want it to be like the groundsman, you'd have absolutely ruined the episode.
So this episode's about staff, isn't it? And you've got a recording from the kit man.
I got a few, various ones.
Oh, you've done a few? Oh, okay. All right, this is lovely.
I did say to Bees, I said, look, I need like 20, 30 seconds from you saying, what's the worst part of being a kit man and what's the best bit? And then he was like, oh, do I have to? I was like, well, you'd be doing me a favour if you do. He was like, okay, I'll do it.
This is under duress.
He then sent me a video, which is 2.5 minutes of him...
his moment in the sun, basically.
So
just to recap, so you've done a record, so we're doing about staff, different staff, and you've done a recording for a few different people involved in the club, and they're going to tell us what their jobs are. Wow. Okay, this is great.
Yeah, and I was banking on the fact that you chose one of them as one you'd fancy to be.
And what's the name of this? Is this the kit man I met?
Yeah, Bees. Yeah,
lovely man. Yeah, he looked really put upon. Yeah,
you're really nice guy.
But you all sort of wind him up quite a lot, yeah, to be fair.
Yeah.
He had the face of a man who gets picked on and all.
Right, he obviously took his chance to
this
in cool. The headlights, because he's given 2.5 minutes here.
So this is a job I'd really like to do, so let's see what he says.
Good evening, Mr. Bamford. Your kit man here, Bees. Responding to the questions you asked me earlier on what is the best and worst parts of being a kit man. I would say definitely the best part of being a kit man would be waving goodbye to you all at the end of the day, watching you all go home in your cars so that I can get a nice bit of peace and quiet to myself.
I bet that's semi-true.
I'm only joking. I'd say the best part, it has to be match day for me. You know, with all the preparation in the week, yeah, match day, you know, the excitement, you know, with all the fans coming in. And
I want this job.
You know, that's what we all work for, really, for match days. So, yeah, especially when we win and the atmosphere in the dressing room, when the music's pumping and everyone's in good spirits. So, yeah, that would definitely be the best part of my job.
I want to do a pod with him.
The worst part of my job, I'd have to say pre-season is horrendous for me. I hate pre-season.
Oh, really?
Getting everything, you know, make sure the equipment, all the gear's in, printing it all, packing everything, making sure everything's ready for pre-season. Stressful times. And I would also say, you know, just the long hours, working weekends. Yeah, that's probably up there with the hardest. But I must say, a highlight of my season so far would have to be getting revenge on you for mixing everybody's kit up in Germany. When I'd have it all prepared for everyone, you know, nicely in the morning, and you, don't know how you did it, to be fair, sneaking into the kit room and mixing everyone's kit up so everyone had the wrong sizes in the morning, and they'd be all coming to me in the morning saying, "Please, Bee, you've given me small instead of large." Yeah, to being able to put some nice DP in your sluggies and for you to come in the morning blaming everybody in the squad was quite funny to watch. So that's been a good highlight of the season so far. Cheers, mate.
Oh, that's great. So I think in my head I've got what he said, match day. Everything's done. When you run on the pitch, he's done his he's got stuff like backup stuff and everything. But you run on the pitch, he can go, they've got everything they need. I can relax here. They're all out there. They've all got socks on. They've all got shirts on. And then he's right there. Where does he sit?
Just like with all the staff to the side of like the dugout. So
right in the middle of it.
Yeah, and he's always around the lads as well. So, like, all the lads get on really well with Bees. Like, it's a good laugh.
Oh, that's it. And, right, is it not etiquette or whatever, but, like, you know when the game's going on, say you're on the bench or whatever, and what's the etiquette of him sort of getting up and shouting or getting carried away or anything?
He won't give it to, like, the players, but the linesman and the fourth officials... Some of the members of staff.
Oh, great.
Bees doesn't do it, but there are some that really give a bit of stick.
Wow, and is there sort of like unwritten rules? Like, obviously, yeah, because he can't go, "Dan Jones, get your head in."
Yeah, no, he wouldn't shout like about tactical stuff or about the players and stuff.
I would worry I'd get carried away and forget my role. I'd be going, "Drop back, son, drop back. Follow your man." Then get told off.
All the good stuff that comes with a match day, then you've got the rest of the week, I think, for Kitman's tough.
Yeah, he did sound weary, but I wonder if that falls away, like you go, because like he said, like he's right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what all of us fans dream of, being right in the middle of all that madness. You know, like Elland Road is insane anyway, but like if I was on that bench, I'd just be going, this is a bit much.
Do you know, he comes on the pitch as well before the game. So when we've done the handshake, and we've taken off our what are they called, lineup tops, the jackets.
If anyone's going to know, it's you, I think.
I don't know. I don't actually know what they're called. Then when you run into your half, obviously you take your jacket off. He stood in your half, waiting to collect all the jackets.
Oh, I'd love that job. Go, give us it here. Oh, I got that. Yeah, cheers. Good luck. Good luck. Do you ever say it back? Good luck. Do you ever say it back to him? Good luck. Don't know why.
I don't think so.
Good luck picking up all the jackets. But it's sort of weird where this sound terrible, but you go, I've never noticed that because I'm so fixated on the players.
Yeah.
I want to start watching the people around it. I'm going to make a real concerted effort to go, oh, look, there's a kit man or woman. They're picking up the thing. That's good. Because I'm obviously following the players going, oh.
So you miss everything else.
I nearly said invisible, which is sort of said terrible, but it's sort of like it is because we're all fixated on the 11 players.
Yeah.
And is there anyone else? Is it just one person doing it or has he got assistants?
No, so he has got an assistant who's with him on match days. Well, not an assistant, they're two kit men, basically. So there's Bees and Paul. And then during the week at the training ground, that there's another kind of kit man who helps with the washing and stuff. We call him Big Ange.
Big Ange. Could I be Big Ange? Does Big Ange come to the game? He doesn't.
He does I think he does security at the game. So he's a part-time kit man, part-time security.
Do you know what? That'll do me. But where does he stand? I want to be near the. I want to be near the players when it's all going off.
I'm pretty sure he's the edge of the tunnel.
Oh, is that near enough? Would I be standing? Actually, is he standing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm out. I need second kit man.
You need to be sat down.
I want to be one of those. I sat down. The other question I want to ask about. Oh, it's probably got a few, but the kit man thing. If you win a trophy or a league or something, and I'm the kit man, can I be up there, boo, boo, jumping about and kind of joining and getting in some of the photos and stuff? Can I do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. I want to be a kit man so much. And no one's going to go, the players only.
Have you not seen the video? Generally, the kit men at most clubs get on really well with the players. So have you seen when have you seen when Man City win the trophy and the kit man's sliding across?
I'm not doing that.
But he gets on well with all the lads and he's integrated as part of the kind of team.
Would I have a nickname, do you reckon?
But I don't know what it'd be yet.
Yet. Right. That's not a job you give up, is it? So the job of kit man at Leeds isn't going to come up often because that's a great job. I know you said it's a negative, but that is a super job. So how often would that?
I think they do look for because it's a big job for two or three of them. So they're always, they're looking for extra people to help.
But head kit person isn't going to come off often because that's a super job, isn't it? That feels like it's for life. If you can, you're going to go, I want to do this forever. Am I getting carried away? Sorry, I just really want to be kit.
The head kit man obviously doesn't come up, but as I said about the needing help and people coming in, we had this one kid, he must have been 17. He came in as to help in the laundry. But he was he's proper chirpy. He'd leave half. So the kit men, obviously it's a long day for him because they have to wait till we've all finished training and left to turn the kit around. But this kid would leave and Bees would be where are you going? And he was adamant that he was going to be an NBA player.
Didn't see that coming.
He was well below 6 foot. First, which I'm not saying is a complete
yeah, but it's the first problem.
It's an issue. Yeah. And he didn't look like he was particularly
physical.
Yeah, no, he didn't look like he was a powerful basketball player. But he would leave like halfway through the day and say he's going because he's got an MBA, not NBA trials, but he's got basketball practice. And then one day he just decided he quit and he just left.
What? And
he wasn't there long. He was only there for like a couple months.
I like him. I want to be. Yes. I want to be with it. Oh, do kit men get nabbed from other clubs? Do you go, oh, they got a good one? Or do you basically, like transfer, we've brought in the Man City kit man?
Do you know what? I think sometimes when they leave, then there's obviously other clubs would take them. I've never heard of like where, so when a manager poached. Moves teams and, I've never heard of a manager saying, I want that kit man to come with me. Or that might have happened.
Kit women, is it harder for women because you obviously you're getting changed? So you can't really, you don't want to be, you know, just for a practicality of some of the job. Is it like we're nude sometimes, or at least buttocks are showing?
Well, yeah, we had a woman who worked in the laundry until she worked for like maybe 3 years with us, but she left recently, maybe at the end of last
season.
She's
seen too many buttocks.
No, she was called Kisnet, and that, she was quite a young lady, I reckon early 20s, but she would always, like, before coming into the change room, she would always knock and then would walk in with a hand over eyes. Is everyone decent?
That's good. That's good. I think I'd do that anyway. Me. I mean, I don't want to see your privates.
Do you know, when I was at Middlesbrough, we had a woman who was like the kit woman called Elaine. And honestly, she was absolute bonkers. Like, she would sometimes, if you'd like, you could wind her up, but she would chase you out of the kit room with like a broom. And actually, if she got you, she would hit you with the broom. And she wouldn't care about coming.
I love a player being injured from it. Why couldn't you play?
She wouldn't give two hoots about coming in the change room if anyone's naked. She'd just walk in. Didn't she? Was like,
seen it all before.
Yeah, I'd say she was like middle-aged. She was probably like 50-ish. But she was a proper character. Like, had a parrot she'd sometimes bring in. Honestly. But she was great.
Is it fair to say I'm in love with her? I'm a little bit in love with her.
she was great. It's totally different, like completely different than the Bees and then Elaine, but she was good.
I know we might be talking about what other jobs I might be doing, but I think I'm going to settle on kit man. I need some negatives, actually. I need to think of some negatives just in case. But
okay, you take a lot of flack, so...
I'm not thick-skinned.
Obviously, you know how you'd react to this. So, obviously, you heard this thing he said at the end about deep heat and sluggies.
Oh, yeah, what's sluggies?
So, sluggies are like the pants that they give you to train in, like Y-front. Call them sluggies. That's just the brand of them.
Yeah.
But anyway, he told you about me changing the sizes.
You told me as well, to be fair.
Yeah.
So it sounds like it was more. You said you did one. It sounds like you did quite a few.
No, I did it the first day to a couple, and then obviously people heard about it and everyone started copying. So obviously he had a little black mark against my name anyway. And I'm in the middle of warming up, like trying not to just sort of laughing.
Well, what's his reaction?
They just couldn't understand. Well, Beast didn't know because he was inside. He didn't click on that I'd done it. So he was like, I don't know. It's like, and then it all got sorted out. So, but I didn't know this. I didn't know that at the time that it was going to be Bees who got a little bit of telling off. And like, Bees was like, obviously confused about the situation. So anyway, that day, the day finished, we went home or whatever. I came in the next day, and always the first in the morning is me, Sam Byram, Kenzie, and sometimes Ethan. So we got changed. I got weighed in, got my sluggies on, and I'm walking up the stairs. And I'm like, well, like, what's that feels like? You know, have you ever put mint shampoo on? You know that?
Oh, yeah. Zing.
And it's like a little bit tingly. I was like, what?
Not the worst feeling in the world.
Yeah, but I was like, why is it starting to tingle? Anyway, I just thought that's strange. Kept walking, got into breakfast, and like literally with every step, I was like, wow, this is burning like bad. And I'm walking into breakfast, and Bees is sat there with like the receptionist, Christina, and the other kit men having breakfast. But I've not twigged on, and I later realized that he was sat there the whole time with his hand over his mouth. And then I went to the toilet to like check whether it was deep heat in my. Yeah, so, well, no, I went to check to see if it was deep heat first. And then I was like, oh, this is brutal. So I'm sat and I thought, I'm not going down. I'm just going to have breakfast. So then I went.
You just stuck it out. I admire that.
I just thought, yeah, but it was getting worse and worse. And then I had breakfast, went downstairs and had to like literally get in a shower, change my soggies. And, but I was livid thinking that it was, I thought it was one of the lads.
Oh, right. So like,
yeah. So for a couple of days now, like, I'm like trying to find out who's done my pants. And I was sure that it was Carl Darlow because me and him always have a laugh. And I was like, yeah, sure, it was him. And then eventually found out it was Bees.
Is it get a bit stressful, like sometimes going, right, what's going to happen? Because that's my worry. I go, I've done something. So something's going to happen back to me. Do you get a bit?
No, because I never do anything too bad.
That's my thought. Ago.
To be fair, when Bees, I knew it was Bees after a while when I'd been told, but then he came up to me and was like, so do we have a truce? I was like, yeah.
I need a truce. It does sound like it's a good, fun job because you're right in the middle with all the players, you're mates with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I need a few more downsides. So he works. We're going to have to do more on this because there's so much I want to know about this. We're going to have to do another episode. So what's the downside? So I imagine match day's quite scary because he must triple, quadruple check everything. Does he have to have like 2, 3, 4? Because sometimes of everything, because sometimes you see like a player, I don't get blood on his shirt and then, you know, it's just like, give us another shirt. I need a shirt with my name on the back. And it's like, in that moment, the kit man going, I'm up.
He will always have three shirts for every player. And then always in the run-on bag, there's like a blood shirt, so which I don't think has a name or number on it.
Right, right. Does he ever get annoyed if you give a shirt away? Because he goes, I've got to print another one. It's very good of you to give it to a child, but pack it in.
He does get a bit annoyed. Especially if, like, there was one season where everyone was, like, giving away their shirt, but it seemed like everyone who was giving it away was a size small. And so, like, he was like, lads, if you give away your shirt and you're a size small, you're not going to have any more smalls because we haven't got any more left, so you're going to have to wear a bigger shirt. So some of the lads, I mean, luckily, it wasn't for me, but...
You could go to the club shop and get a small, to be fair.
Yeah, but I think that even then... He tried to get the allocation. So there's stressful things like that. I think, do you know what? On a match day, I know B said that he loves a match day, but there's a lot of demands on him on a match day. Like,
oh, go on.
Say, for instance, he's running around to get everything sorted, make sure everyone's kit's good, make sure everyone's got what they need, make sure the manager, if he needs any kind of kit or coat or anything, is sorted.
Oh, he does that as well. Oh, my God. Right, okay.
Yeah, and then... He will be like, there'll be random things. So say, for instance, someone's studs come loose on their boots.
He's got to be able to sort anything out, basically, as well.
Yeah, like, Bees, can you tie in my studs? And then for me, the other, stupidly, like, I've created a little bit of an issue for him by accident. Again.
Yeah.
I managed to pull my lace on the boots that, like, have a sock on. I'd pulled the lace out, but the end of the lace was like frayed a little bit. So I couldn't get the lace back.
I need you, Bamford.
So he had to like get the lighter, burn the end of the lace, and then like really get like a long metal stick and try and thread it through.
I bet he slags you off at home to his missus. Yeah. Like, frayed laces, Bamford.
I did say sorry, mate.
And also, everything on match day is probably a little bit fraught, isn't it? Because tensions are high. So, like, if it, like, on a Tuesday, it's like, have you got any, if you've got any spare socks on a Tuesday, on Saturday, got socks, I need socks. It's like, that's it, like yeah. a bit, right, do I still want to do it? Do you know what for me is, like, getting to the away game, I don't know, getting to Shrewsbury, and you go, no shin pads. No shin pads.
That happened.
Okay.
But that wasn't Bees. That was the old kit man.
Really?
And we played, this would have been a fair few, maybe 4 years ago or more. We played Fulham away. Got to the changing rooms at the stadium and we had no shin pads.
Actually no shin pads. I thought you'd say no socks or something. No shin pads.
No, he hadn't packed any of the shin pads. So he had to go to like JD or wherever the nearest shop was and buy a load of shin pads.
I'd love to see the heart monitor on him at that point. Do you know what I mean? Spike. That's my fear. I like, because I'm not a good organizer, but I could learn, but just that I need to quadruple check because my ticker couldn't handle the stress.
Couldn't take it.
No. So what other bits and bobs does he have to do off the top of your head? Just tell me what, like, a few other things. Do you turn up with nothing? And he goes, here's your boots, socks, kit, pants.
Day to day, we have in our places all of our kit. So you arrive in the change room and you've got your socks.
Oh, is it laid out? Like, nice.
Yeah. Your socks, shorts, T-shirt, Under Armour. And then your boots are obviously in the boot room. So that's kind of his day-to-day, is just making sure everything's sorted for training. But then during the week, he'll have to also plan ahead for the games because he'll find out what kit we're wearing in terms of what colour kit. And then he'll find out potentially who's in the squad. So if he has to print any shirts for a young player, for example.
Yeah.
And then on a match day, everything's like all folded within like towels, everything you need for the warm up, then your match kit.
Is he pristine the way he does it? Do you go, well, that's
yeah,
nice.
He's very top, nice. He's yeah, very good. Yeah. If you wanted to be the kit man, you'd have very big boots to fill.
Yeah, my attention to detail is awful. Was you notice with me and never asking all the questions? Just going back to the youngsters. So when he get information before other people, like just so that you know, a couple of these youngsters are a bit. So he'll get early info as well. That must be quite nice.
Sometimes, yeah, but then sometimes
we've got a player coming in who's called Smith. So we need a few Smiths, things like that.
I think he will some of the time get that, but then
ooh,
also
that'd be nice.
This is, I guess, the stressful part. It will just get sprung on him last minute and say, we need this, we need that. And like,
I bet, has he also got, he's probably got no pushback, has he? He goes, because he can't go, can't get that for you Saturday. Not going to happen. No, it is. no can do. You've given this to me 5 o'clock on a Friday. It's not going to happen. He can't push back, can he?
He's got to find a way most of the time.
Yeah.
And to be fair, majority of the time he does.
Majority.
Finds a way. Yeah. I can't think of a time he didn't.
Yeah. Because it just feels like one of those jobs we've spoken about before, like stuff going on at home or whatever. Your football is happening at 3 o'clock on Saturday, regardless of whether he can't find shin pads.
Yeah.
They're not going to go. Just to let the 50,000 know that we're not going to play because Leeds have forgotten their shorts.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm undecided, actually. My pressure might be too much. Right, we've run out of time because you've got to go. Are you training this morning?
Yes.
Yeah, so you need to go and train, which I feel like is quite important. Thanks, Leeds. So should we do another ep about staff? Because I hadn't even got kit men and women on my list of things to talk about.
No, I've got ready for next time. I've got voice note from the receptionist.
Oh, yes. So excited.
Could be up your street. also the chef, which I'm not sure.
Yeah, I really want to know about that. I've got loads of questions about the chef. Yeah. The canteen, I called it in my notes.
Okay. And then is there any others you'd like to hear from? Maybe.
I would like to know about. I can't put security, which we've touched on actually, but security
Okay, yeah.
That's my big one. That's my big one. That's my that one's in bold on my notes.
Okay.
So we'll do that next time.
Yeah, but, I can get them.
Yeah, started. You go and play football. You get down the park and play some football.
Right.
All right, thanks for that, mate.
I'll get them slotted for next week.
Yeah, good luck tomorrow.
All right, cheers, mate.
Cheers. Hope you enjoyed that episode of My Mates a Footballer. Plenty more to come in the series. And if this is your first episode, that sort of annoyed me. Where have you been? We've covered lots of different topics in the previous episodes, including one standout one where I opened the floor to questions from you, the listener. Pat told me he particularly enjoyed that episode because the questions were more insightful. I found that hurtful. But anyway, we're doing more of them. So if you want to ask Patrick something, make sure you use the MMAF hashtag when you post on social media so we can find it and credit you. Okay, cheers. See you soon. Bye.
And a very good morning to you. This is Five Live Breakfast on a Saturday morning with Chris Warburton and me, Eleanor Oldroyd. The top stories this morning: Israel has carried out a huge wave of attacks in Beirut, hitting the headquarters of Hezbollah and its arms stores. The initial strikes are believed to have targeted the group's leader, Hassan Nasrallah, but there's no word yet whether he's been hit. Lebanon's health ministry says at least 6 people were killed and 91 injured. Rami Abu Kalam is a journalist in Beirut.
It's been really scary. You know, I was going to pick up my cousin from the airport, which is not far from where those strikes were. And yeah, I mean, it was clearly the largest and loudest set of blasts that I think we've heard. You know, there's been a lot of explosions, a lot of sonic booms, but this was clearly, yeah, unprecedented in scale.
More than 40 people have been killed by Hurricane Helene in the southeast of the United States. Power companies are working to restore electricity to millions of customers. Barbara Tripp is the fire chief in the city of Tampa, where there has been serious disruption.
We have responded to over 200 medical and fire-related calls, anywhere from power lines down to burning vehicles, burning homes, and as well as any traffic accident, as well as serious medical calls.
The company, which provides Wi-Fi for many major railway stations in England and Scotland, says it expects the service to be up and running again this weekend. A cyber attack began affecting users on Wednesday. A man has been arrested.
A former head of the financial watchdog, the FCA, says banking hubs need to offer a greater range of services to customers. Charles Randall, who's now a member of the Financial Inclusion Commission, which aims to widen access to banking, says it's not enough to just help people pay their bills and check their balances. These people in Prestatyn were asked about the services at their banking hub.
It's quite handy, really. It's a shame that the bank I was with has closed down, but this does the same thing.
What all I do is basic, and so I find it very good.
I just needed simply 3-month statements printed out, and I've been told I've had to order them. It could take up to 7 days or go somewhere else.